Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the PNC's Foreign Exchange Update Call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, August 25th, 2015. I would now like to turn the conference over to Paul Toth, Managing Director in PNC's Foreign Exchange Group. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning. My name is Paul Toth, and I would like to welcome all of you to PNC Foreign Exchange Group's Economic Update Call. The topic of today's call is the global impact of China's yuan devaluation. This is part of our ongoing effort to enhance our customer relationship by bringing news and ideas of value. In a market which has seen much volatility over the past year, this last month has seen it spike once again. So we thought that it would be relevant to have PNC's senior international economist, Bill Adams, speak on these events and share his perspectives broadly. Bill will discuss today how China changed its current exchange rate fix and why they did that. He'll talk a little bit about what they're going to do next. He'll also address how this affects the outlook for the U.S. dollar and other global currencies. And then finally, talk about the implications for the oil and commodity prices, as well as the impact on global economic markets. So today we're going to go for about a half an hour. There are a few administrative notes to go over. This call will be recorded and available for replay tomorrow. A file of the recording will be posted to our public website, pnc.com/fx. We have received questions from many of you in advance, and so we will be addressing those, and no one will have the ability to ask live questions during the presentation. Right now, I would like to take a moment to read a required disclaimer. This conference call is for general information purposes only and is not intended as legal, tax, accounting, or financial advice, or a recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell any security or currency, or to engage in any specific transaction or investment strategy, and does not purport to be comprehensive, nor is it intended to constitute research as defined by applicable regulations. The information to be presented is gathered from public sources that PNC believes to be accurate and reliable, but neither PNC nor any of its affiliates is providing any guarantee or warranty as to the accuracy or reliability of such information. Under no circumstances should any information contained in this presentation and or materials distributed be used or considered as an offer or solicitation of an offer to participate in any particular transaction or strategy. Any reliance upon any such information is solely and exclusively at your own risk. Please consult with your own counsel, accountant, or other advisor regarding your specific situation. Any opinions, forecasts, and views expressed during this conference call are subject to change without notice due to market conditions and other factors. So with no further ado, I would like to introduce Mr. Bill Adams. Bill is a vice president and senior international economist for the PNC Financial Services Group. His responsibilities include forecasting economic conditions and exchange rates, covering emerging Asia, the Eurozone, Canada, and Latin America. Mr. Adams serves as the principal spokesman on global economic issues for PNC and frequently presents to PNC clients on the international economic outlook. He has extensive background in the Chinese economy, having lived in China for 5 years while serving as a resident economist for the Conference Board China Center from 2009 to 2011. Bill is a graduate of Harvard College and holds an advanced degree from the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. So with that, Bill, can you talk a little bit about how China changed its exchange rate fix and why they might have done that?
Sure, Paul. Thank you, and good morning. Good morning, everyone. Thanks again for joining us. A lot of you may already know me or have seen me speak at PNC events. If you don't, I am PNC's forecaster on international. The economic research that we're going to talk about today, a lot of it is available on PNC's website or from your PNC contacts if you're not already receiving it in your inbox. So with that, on the FX fix, so the Chinese currency and the Chinese exchange rate is run differently from like the euro or the yen. The fix is something that's a specific concept to the way the Chinese central bank manages their exchange rate. So each day, the People's Bank of China, the central bank, will announce a price, a parity price, and the exchange rate, the rules are that the exchange rate is allowed to trade within a 2% band around that parity price. And on August 11th, they announced that they were changing the way that they're going to set that parity price, and they're going to ask market participants to tell the central bank what was the closing price that was actually transacted on the previous day and use that previous day's price to set the parity price on the following day. And because there's a gap between what the central bank had been saying should be that parity price and what financial market participants were actually doing, changing this mechanism caused the Chinese currency to depreciate very quickly on August 11th and August 12th. It depreciated by 3% on, I think, just those two trading days. But here, since then, there's been, I think, a pretty considerable gap between what the stated policy is in China and what the government is actually doing. So the stated policy now is that they're going to allow a larger role for supply and demand. They're going to look at what financial market participants are doing, and then they're going to set the parity price accordingly. And I think if they were to do that, we could see a pretty rapid depreciation of the Chinese currency. Let me think again. From mid-July to in 2014 to July in 2015, pretty much every currency depreciated by 20% or more against the U.S. dollar. The euro, the yen, the Korean won, the Mexican peso, all of them, the Canadian dollar, there was this massive depreciation of everything against the U.S. dollar. Or another way you could think of it is that the dollar was surging against foreign currencies when those foreign currencies were actually shifting around quite a bit less against each other. And the exception to that from mid-2014 to mid-2015 was the Chinese currency, which was changed very little, is 6.21 in mid-2014, and it was 6.21 again in 2015, right up until this change in the Chinese currency policy in August. And so the Chinese currency had surged against non-U.S. dollar currencies over the previous year, and if they allowed market forces to act, I would expect the Chinese currency to at least depreciate somewhat against the U.S. dollar, as it split the difference between what our currency has done and what every other currency has done out there. On the other hand, the People's Bank of China, after August 12th, said that there was, let me get the quote just right, there is at present no basis for continued depreciation of the yuan. So China's central bank is right and the market is wrong, was their point of view from August 12th onward. And so from August 12th right up until, I think, yesterday, the Chinese exchange rate didn't really move. And so that was, there's an obvious tension right now between their stated goal of a more market-oriented exchange rate, which would probably help the Chinese convince the International Monetary Fund that they have a more free-floating currency and it should be included in the global basket of reserve currencies. There's a tension between that goal of a market-oriented exchange rate and China's fears of having a floating exchange rate, fears of a depreciating currency, and what that would mean for the Chinese economy generally. So I think I've covered some of that, Paul. Is there anything that you want me to focus on?
Well, I guess I was just curious, as you're talking about that, it seems like China's caught between these two divergent goals, right? So
yep.
Do you think that the free floating currency is something that we are going to move to in reality, or is it just something that they publicly say to the market while really still manipulating things behind the scenes?
I mean, I think the most clearly they've said one thing and done another so far. It's been, I think, only 2 weeks since this stated change in policy, and it's not unusual in China for them to state a policy and to actually implement it relatively slowly. So I think in the most likely outcome is probably over the next 1 to 2 months, we will see continued depreciation of the yuan against the U.S. dollar. Hard to say how much because, you know, this is a new way of China managing the exchange rate, and there's no track record to compare it against. But I think we're around 6.4 today, yuan per U.S. dollar, and if we got to 6.8 per U.S. dollar over the next 1 to 2 months, that would seem to be, you know, that wouldn't be surprising to me at this point. They could decide that they want to let it depreciate less than that, and I think one of the reasons for them to be afraid of more depreciation right now is that if the Chinese currency weakens, that means that the Chinese stock market's value is declining in U.S. dollar terms or in foreign currency terms, and that could encourage foreign investors to pull even more capital out of Chinese mainland stocks. There's been this massive sell-off in Chinese stocks since June. They're down, I think, 40% from their peak, and the government's very worried about that stock sell-off. We don't think that that's going to trigger a recession in China. There aren't as robust linkages between the Chinese stock market and the Chinese real economy as there are in an advanced economy like the United States or the United Kingdom. But certainly that's a motivation for the Chinese government to not allow the yuan to weaken as rapidly as market forces would probably dictate.
One of the things that's been nice for our client base in general doing business in China has been the liberalization of the policy, mm-hmm. expanding the band range over the past few years, allowing more currency exchange centers. Do you think that this liberalization is going to continue in this manner, or do you think that they're going to restrict it a little bit more going forward?
I think the direction is probably still more financial market openness, more openness in international payments, more fluctuations of the currency, probably in both directions. And it's just a question of what is the pace of that transition. I think just overnight last night we had another interest rate cut and cut in the reserve requirement ratio, which are both monetary tools that the central bank is using to stimulate the economy, to counteract capital outflows from China, and to probably they're also targeting stabilizing their domestic stock market with that. But one of the sort of less noticed details in the announcement overnight is they also liberalized the way Chinese bank deposit interest rates are set. So interest rates on bank deposits with term deposits of more than 1 year, so the Chinese equivalent of CDs, those interest rates, commercial banks now have more flexibility to set those rates according to market conditions. And I think the headlines from China have all been about concerns about the devaluation of the currency, concerns about the spectacular decline in the stock market, and about the slowing economy. But at the same time, there's a lot of pretty significant moves towards financial openness and financial liberalization in the last 12 months. And I think you would have to see a much more significant slowdown in Chinese growth for them to be concerned enough about that to put financial liberalization on the back burner and say, no, we're just going to focus on stimulating the economy right now. I don't think we're there yet.
I mean, the government is very caught between having to maintain a very large labor force mm-hmm. and pacify a newly emerging middle class, and mm-hmm. at the same time try to move into a more liberalized, freely trading currency mm-hmm. in which they need the government to operate so that the currency can function correctly. So with that, it makes me think about the fact that it's a political priority for China to have their currency included in the IMF's basket of reserves currency. So what impact do you see that this slowing economy, the weakening of the currency, might have in the IMF's decision to include them? Do you think this will delay it a lot, postpone it?
I think a lot will depend on how much they liberalize the exchange rate over the next 12 months or so. So the stated policy, again, was that they're going to set the peg around which the currency trades. So, it's allowed to fluctuate plus or minus that parity fix by 2% every trading day. At least that's the stated policy. And if they allowed that parity rate to follow the market rate and just allowed market forces to dictate the Chinese currency, I think what we would likely see is a pretty dramatic depreciation of the yuan against the U.S. dollar in the next month or two. And then we would see the yuan trade like a typical emerging market currency, so quite a bit of volatility against the U.S. dollar, probably pretty weak as the Federal Reserve edges closer to an interest rate hike, which could be as near as a month away, and so a much more volatile exchange rate than we've seen in years past. And I think if they did that, the IMF would see, all right, China has a market-determined exchange rate. The argument for including it in that basket of reserve currencies is pretty strong. I think if they just let it sit where it is and say we're not comfortable with more volatility, the IMF will either say that the conditions aren't right for including it in the basket, or if they want to be a little more diplomatic, they'll say they've already said that they're going to delay the decision on including the Chinese currency in the basket until 2016. They could wait until they get to 2016 and say, oh, we'll wait until 2017, rather than come right out and say no, they'll just delay it indefinitely.
That would make some sense. So it seems that, you know, one of the nice things about emerging market currencies is while they may be more volatile, they tend to have a less impact globally because the volumes in which they're traded are smaller. That's not really the case with China. So how is China, with the massive amount of volume that is traded in the currency and the fact that it has the potential to have the volatility of an emerging market, going to impact other markets?
Well, I remember when I was in grad school studying China, one of the things that we were taught was that the stability of the Chinese exchange rate during the Asian financial crisis, which was 1997-1998, was in part an anchor for Asia, and it discouraged countries from devaluing their currencies even more than they would have otherwise. And so I think if the Chinese yuan does continue to depreciate against the U.S. dollar, that's going to encourage the other emerging market currencies to also depreciate. And some of that is, you could call that competitive devaluation. I don't know that that's necessarily the case, though, because I don't think it's going to be central banks intervening in foreign exchange markets in India or in Japan or Korea that's going to drive those currencies weaker. I think what it is that China's footprint in the global economy is huge, especially for an emerging market. And so if the Chinese currency is weaker, that means the average of all currencies around the world is going to be weaker. Or stated another way, it means that the U.S. dollar is strengthening even further against everything else out there. So I think the stability of the Chinese currency up until now, if you're looking at a weighted average of the dollar's exchange rate versus all of our trading partner currencies, the fact that the Chinese have more or less held their currency fixed from mid-2014 up until the beginning of this depreciation prevented the dollar from appreciating even more against foreign currencies. And if we hadn't had that, we would have seen more dollar depreciation, more headwinds for U.S. exports from a strong dollar, and also even lower commodity prices, because those prices are priced both for American buyers as well as for buyers in foreign countries.
Okay. Phil, I'd like to ask you to shift gears for a second. So we've been talking about this macroeconomic picture, but I'd like to kind of dial it down and speak more specifically to some microeconomic issues that might be facing our companies. So will you address the implications for multinational companies doing business in China, whether that's manufacturing there for export or companies that are now beginning to concentrate on developing China's domestic market? How is this impacting the person on the ground?
Well, so in the immediate aftermath of the Chinese currency devaluation, you saw a big sell-off in American equity markets. And a lot of us at both at PNC Economics and in PNC Investment Strategy got questions about what was going on, what are people afraid of. And I think the most convincing argument that I've heard about why that's bad for U.S. Stock prices for China to devalue the currency is that the value of American corporate earnings generated in Chinese currency is going to decline as the Chinese currency weakens. So I think that a weaker Chinese currency means either the value of sales that companies book in China is lower in U.S. dollar terms, or repatriated profits is lower, or if a company has been just trying to say, well, our price list is in U.S. dollars and we don't have currency exposure, a lot of those companies with those U.S. dollar price lists have, their products have become 20% more expensive to local buyers in foreign countries. And it hasn't affected China as much because they've intervened to prevent their currency from depreciating. But I think if the Chinese yuan were to depreciate, that same headwind to U.S. overseas sales would be a factor in China as well. So I think that you can easily draw an analogy to the problems of management and business strategy that American companies would face in China if the currency were to depreciate by much more than it has already. It would feel a lot probably like the way American companies have seen headwinds to sales in Canada or the Eurozone or elsewhere in Asia because of the strong dollar.
Gotcha. So with the yuan weakening, and then we're seeing other emerging markets like the INR, the peso selling off, many people in the news have been talking about this as a race to the bottom, like the beginning of a trend where exporting economies will start long-term devaluing in order to stimulate growth and then have sort of an arms race to the bottom. Do you think that that is the new normal and that that's where we're headed?
I would frame it in a different way, and I think the reason why this all feels so bizarre to us in the United States is because we're not used to having a surging U.S. dollar. It's been a long time since the U.S. dollar was a really strong currency, and the dollar is back. I think you see it both in exchange rates, the dollar's strength against both advanced economy currencies as well as emerging market currencies. I mean, think of even the closest economy, both in sort of structure of its economy and its place in the business cycle to the U.S. right now is probably the United Kingdom. And the dollar is 156, 157 against U.S. dollars per British pound right now. It was $2 per pound in, I think, 2007, 2008, before the global financial crisis. So strong dollar is back, and I think that is going to continue to be a challenge for American businesses. But I think if you're thinking about race to the bottom and currency wars, there are two ways to measure that. One is you look at exchange rates, and certainly you see lots of currencies depreciating against the U.S. dollar. But if you saw, if you were to see a really aggressive currency war, countries actively working to debase their currencies, sooner or later that would turn into high inflation because that would mean that those currencies bought less and they were inflating away the value of those currencies. And inflation is really low all around the world right now. That's partly because of low oil prices and there's some supply factors as well as modest global demand growth behind oil. But if you look at any sort of basic material, iron ore or steel or copper or you name it, those prices are way off their highs right now. And that's holding inflation down around the world, and we just don't see a ton of inflationary pressure. And so I think you would have to either see, you would have to see high inflation somewhere. Pretty much the only country I can think of high inflation is Brazil, the sort of this outlier. I just don't think that that amounts to currency war.
Gotcha. Well, with China being the one of the largest users of raw materials such as energy, grains, metals, and having seen that consumption decline rather dramatically over the first half of the year, I would think that that would keep inflation under wraps and really keep commodities prices suppressed. Mm-hmm. And I think that that would probably have an impact on commodity-based currencies like the Canadian dollar, the Brazilian real, the Australian dollar, the New Zealand dollar. Do you agree with that, or is that a broad generalization?
I think, well, we definitely have seen weak growth in China hold down the value of emerging market currencies and the currencies of those commodity exporting economies. In the aftermath of this sudden depreciation of the Chinese yuan, you did see those currencies weaken even more. And there are a couple of different interpretations of why that could be. I think you could argue that financial market participants, we don't see everything that goes on inside the Chinese economy. There's a lot of skepticism about the economic data, but if the government is suddenly depreciating their currency, maybe that means that growth is even weaker than we believed. Or it could be the depreciation of the currency is China is such a large buyer of those basic materials that the China purchase price of those materials is going to be the price of iron ore or of oil or of coal. And so if you're selling those products and China's currency weakens, then your price is just going down. I think there's, you can't really tease out in real time which of those two narratives for what's going on in financial markets is the more accurate one. But you definitely can see that as growth in China has weakened, commodity prices are low, inflation is low, and as the Chinese currency has depreciated, that's been another force holding down commodity prices. And actually, I should add, so the Chinese currency depreciated very sharply in the first 2 days after they announced this policy in August 11th, August 12th, and then more or less held steady until yesterday. And then in the last 24 hours, I think the Chinese yuan has depreciated another 0.4% against the U.S. dollar. So it was more or less fixed against the dollar for around 10 days or so. We have seen a small depreciation overnight last night. And thinking about the direction of the currency in the next couple of weeks and months, a plausible way for China to try to manage this transition to a more free-floating exchange rate would be they will let it sit for a while, as they've done over the last 10 days or so. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the Chinese government engineers a short-lived appreciation of the Chinese currency against the U.S. dollar to kind of shake up speculative positions, people who are making leveraged bets in exchange rates. But I think I think the trend is probably going to be weaker again over the next couple of weeks and months.
Great. Getting back to Chinese consumption for a second, in addition to buying large amounts of commodities, historically the PBOC has been one of the biggest buyers, if not the biggest buyer, of U.S. treasuries. Can you talk a little bit about that? With them now tapping into reserves in order to inject liquidity into their banking system, what effect is this going to have on U.S. treasury yields?
I think the concern would be that if China were this major buyer of treasuries and they stopped buying, that would push up treasury yields and might cause financial market volatility in the United States. The reason why I'm not so worried about that this year is because even though the Federal Reserve is no longer buying U.S. government bonds through quantitative easing, maybe China is going to be selling off some government bonds because they have capital outflows. There's so much quantitative easing happening outside of the United States right now. If you combine the QE programs in Japan and in the Eurozone, it's something like a third more than QE3 was at its peak in 2013. It bounces around a bit because of exchange rates, but there's very, very, very aggressive government bond buying programs occurring outside of the United States. And for the biggest players in the global markets for the most highly rated government bonds, so the United States, Germany, Australia, Switzerland, those countries' government bonds, Japan, there's some substitutability. If you're running a Middle Eastern sovereign wealth fund, do you want to put your money in U.S. government bonds or in German bonds or in Japanese bonds? And so with really aggressive quantitative easing programs underway in the Eurozone and Japan, that sort of trickles down into downward pressure on government bond yields here in the United States, and I would expect that to outweigh the effect of China being a smaller buyer of U.S. government bonds.
Okay. Do you think that the recent devaluation of the yuan is going to have any impact on the timing of the Fed's expected rate hike?
I think the devaluation of the yuan and the sort of general strength of the U.S. dollar does complicate the Fed's decision-making, and you definitely see a big divergence in economic indicators in the United States between indicators for the service sector, which is less exposed to foreign competition and where we've seen pretty strong growth in 2015, and indicators for the manufacturing sector, which have shown a marked slowdown in economic activity in 2015 relative to where it was last year. And I think that's basically because of the strong U.S. dollar, as well as less demand from the energy sector for manufactured goods. So I think that is a headwind to the U.S. growth, but from the Fed's perspective, that headwind is offset to a degree by the boost to consumer spending power from lower oil prices. That means consumers have more money left over after filling their gas tanks, and that's more spending that we should see on products and services sold in the United States. We haven't really seen it in the economic data so far for 2015, but sooner or later that should show up. There's a very strong relationship over time between how much money consumers have to spend on gasoline and how much they have left over and they do spend on the rest of their consumption in the United States. So I think it's kind of a toss-up now between do we see a rate hike in September or do we see it in December this year? The Fed has stated many times, Fed officials have stated many times that we're very likely to see a rate hike in 2015, so it's sort of a question of when, not if. Maybe they could do October, although they're more likely to do September or December because we'll have press conferences then, and the Fed can explain their decision to hike rates. So I think it's going to be it's a complicating factor, and probably it means that next Friday's jobs report for the United States is going to be a very, very important bit of information for the Fed to decide, do they move in September or do they wait a little bit longer? But if the question is, do we see that rate hike in 2015 or not, I think the answer is still we are very, very likely to see a rate hike before the end of the year.
Okay, great. So I know we're trying to primarily focus on China, but I don't think any discussion around financial volatility this week would be complete without talking about the recent sell-off in the equity markets. We've seen them come back a little bit, but still I think that's really weighing on everyone's mind. Can you just comment on the recent global equity weakness and where you see that going in the short term?
Well, so PNC Investment Strategy has done a lot of work on what happens to equities and bonds as the Fed shifts from monetary policy being on hold to being in an interest rate hiking cycle, and we're pretty confident that we are about to make that shift in U.S. monetary policy. What our investment strategy team have seen is that, on average, you do see more equity market volatility ahead of central bank rate hikes in the United States, but the timing is sort of uncertain. And often, if the Federal Reserve is hiking U.S. interest rates, many times you will see that volatility in equity markets is short-lived because the U.S. economy is continuing to improve. That's why the Fed feels comfortable hiking rates, and a good U.S. economy is good for the equity markets. So, I think some of the domestic equity market volatility, it seems like it's probably more driven by expectations of the Federal Reserve policy change rather than U.S. economic data. I mean, the labor market data still looks strong. Unemployment claims, which come out every week in the United States, have been under 300,000, which is a very solid level for 24 weeks now, which is a nice long stretch. And it seems like the U.S. economy is continuing to see broad-based growth, although at a fairly moderate pace, but enough to justify, enough to keep the unemployment rate moving down and enough to justify the Fed in hiking rates. I think in emerging markets, with the exception of China and India, I mean, many emerging markets are commodity producers, and so low commodity prices are bad for growth in those economies. I think that definitely applies for Brazil, applies to Mexico, applies for Russia. In India and China, I would actually expect low prices of oil and iron ore and other basic materials to be a boost to growth. I'm not sure how long that's going to take to play out, and I think in China there are a lot of other headwinds to growth that might be more important, at least in the short run. But I think a lot of the global economy is pretty well positioned to continue to see solid growth in the rest of 2015 and in 2016, even with the Federal Reserve about to hike interest rates.
Right. Okay. So do you see all of this volatility abating anytime soon?
I mean, if I knew exactly what was going to happen tomorrow, I'd be a very rich man, so I'm not sure. But I think our sense is that the volatility seems more related to sort of shifting expectations and maybe concerns about the Chinese equity market than it is about economic fundamentals. And so without a fundamental shift, it seems like we would expect that sooner or later the fundamentals will overpower this sort of shift in sentiment. On the Chinese equity market, I mean, it had gone up, let me get the number right, 160% between early 2014 and its peak in June of this year. No one thought that 160% surge in Chinese equities meant that the Chinese economy was suddenly doing great. And so the fact that it's now fallen by 40%, I don't think is necessarily a sign that the Chinese economy is weaker than it was. So it's something to watch. It's something that we are watching very closely. But I think given all of the other tailwinds to growth, and the biggest one is that we have low oil prices, and low oil prices are great for consumers in the United States, in Europe, in Japan, in China, in India. That's most of the global economy. I think that should sooner or later be important, should show up in the economic data.
Okay. Well, I know it's hard to have a crystal ball and see exactly where prices are going, but one thing I think that we can be fairly confident in is that there's going to continue to be a lot of volatility in the market. I think that's especially relevant to our client base who is moving into the fourth quarter and many of whom are setting their budgets for next year. So probably a good time for our client base to think about doing some hedging, whether that's on the interest rate side or on the currency side or on the commodity side. Clearly, volatility continues to be a factor.
Mm-hmm. And PNC is expecting to have our foreign exchange forecasts out around Labor Day, so that'll be a tool that clients can use for that.
Yeah, I know a lot of people like to use those when they're looking at where they might set their budgets for next year. Well, we are just out of time today. Bill, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts and opinions with us this morning. I would also like to thank all of our clients that are on the line for dialing in today. Hopefully you found this informative. If you have any questions about today's conversation, please reach out to your relationship manager or your FX sales officer, and we will make every effort to follow up and get you an answer to your questions. We also plan to host a replay of this call. That will be available tomorrow on pnc.com/FX. If you have any additional questions, please give us a call at 1-800-723-9106. This concludes today's conversation. Thank you all for attending.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.